Dark Wings.
Dork Words. A Game of Thrones podcast.
Season 5, Episode 10.
Mother's Mercy.
Oh boy. We're back, folks. Wrapping up a grim thing.
Grim.
I'm your
grim host,
Chuck Davis, and with me on this grim evening are
Michael Hergard,
Catherine King,
Gregory McCallie.
Very formal.
Well, man, a lot of brutality, a lot of finality, and a lot of cliffhanger-ishness.
To be expected, I guess.
Including a literal cliff jump.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Never mind the hang.
Although there was also a hanging.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
This episode had everything.
Everyone died. The show's over. Fuck.
Get out your Game of Thrones coloring book, guys.
Four or five.
Color everything red.
Right. Blood. Comes with red crayon only.
Yeah.
Right. A box of red crayons. A box.
Well, where to start?
How many fairly established characters were...
Offed?
Were offed. Five, four or five?
Lady Selyse, gone. Stannis, gone. Miranda, gone.
Yeah, that counts.
Meryn Trant,
gone. Jon Snow.
Gone.
Myrcella.
Oh, yeah. Shit. It's a lot.
What is that, like six?
Yeah.
Six, yeah.
Wow. Well, I guess the big one is Jon.
I would say, yeah.
And I'm a little shocked. I mean, I was shocked in the book, but I mean, honestly... I feel like John's not really going to be dead. I mean, that was a lot of stabs. I mean, he's going to be dead, but the show's already established that a priest of R'hllor can raise someone from the dead in the form of Sir Beric Dondarrion among the Brotherhood without banners. So I feel like Melisandre's return to the Black Keep
meaningful.
Immediately before John's murder indicates that she can exercise her resurrection skills in episode 1 of season 6, because they can't be done with John. His destiny is unfulfilled. I mean, you could say arguably the same is true of Robb Stark or Ned Stark or any other pivotal character, but I feel like it's different with John. I feel like the end game can't happen properly without John's presence.
Like, you can't put 5 books worth of material and then just kill him off. Just to get stabbed in the back by your brothers.
And especially because, I mean, so this pretty much happens to John at the end of A Dance with Dragons, but it's cliffhanger end of book material, which is just classic setup for reversal.
Yeah.
But still, even though that's going to happen... Or I suspect that'll happen. It'll be a little unfulfilling in the way that a fake out like that always is.
Well, I mean, like you said, we've seen Beric Dondarrion come back. We, in a completely different way, we saw in just this episode the return of, or the birth of Sir Robert Strong, if that's what they choose to call him.
They didn't name him.
Yeah.
Yeah. But there's ways that people seem dead and aren't, I guess, in the show. So that's been established, so it won't be quite as... shockery.
Right.
If that's what happens.
But they haven't really pulled a fast one like that on the show. You know, it was... they barely introduced Beric Dondarrion on the show after he'd already been resurrected a few times.
Right. The only semi-fast one they pulled like this was Jon Snow after he was feathered with 3 arrows.
And that's right.
We were like at the end of the episode like, oh... Or people who hadn't read the books were like, well, is that it?
Yeah.
Nah, he's fine.
I don't know. I don't feel optimistic. I feel like if this show has taught me anything, it's taught me not to be attached to any characters. they are all fallible. They're all human. My favorite one died today, and now I hate the show forever. But it's...
Oh, Maren Trant was your favorite?
How did you know? It feels true to form. It feels true to form, unfortunately. Well,
maybe they feel like they can safely do that because they've established that sense of finality in the death of some other major characters that they can afford to pull back and let John exist as a, you know, resurrected half person, or who knows what'll happen.
I mean,
there.
Yeah. Beric seemed kind of none the worse for wear.
He just seemed weary and diminished in spirit, but otherwise,
and cut up,
he had his full faculties. You know, he was just
he was never like Lady Stoneheart, which the show is just never. That's never going to be revealed. But I mean, in the book, she can't even talk or whatever, but I think it's just kind of like how you die has some stuff to do with it, too. So,
yeah, she had, Lady Catelyn had her throat slit, so in the book, when she was resurrected,
right,
presumably by Thoros, she can't talk.
I think she has to, like, cover her throat. She can kind of, like...
Rasp?
Yeah, she's a raspy...
She's a raspy
lady.
She's a rasper. That didn't work. In my head, it sounded really funny.
There's nothing funny happening here.
No, nothing. This podcast will come with a warning. This one's not funny.
Only despair.
Yeah. I mean,
it's the little love bite that the Sand Snake gave to Bronn is about the only moment of levity. Yeah.
Well, he's probably going to die, too, because he got a poison ear. The old poison ear.
The love bite of death.
Did we list off Marcella on our list of six? Okay. Yeah.
That was brutal. That was heartwarming and heart-wrenching all at once.
Man.
Jaime finally gets a moment, and then, boom, taken right away.
Cersei is going to be pissed. Cersei's... Wow. What's going to happen in the first part of next season?
Her vengeance will be...
Unstoppable.
Yes.
Like that thunder roll.
I mean, her power is diminished, clearly, having done the Walk of Atonement. Mm-hmm. I mean, that, and what a powerful sequence that was.
Wow. It really was. Yeah. It was really long, too.
If I'd known that Lena Headey's nude scene was going to be that...
You wouldn't have gotten excited. That,
no.
Yeah.
But, what a powerful scene and powerful performance, just the range of everything that she did, from her being broken in the cell to still sort of gaming the High Sparrow with her sort of pseudo confession.
Sure, whatever I have to do, just get me out of here.
And then just the, you know, kind of the composure that she had at first, and how she kind of broke down at the end, and how it was kind of brutal that once she finally made it back to the Red Keep, there was no one. There was really no warmth there in her reception, except from Qyburn, who is a dubious character at best. Right. But the closest thing she has to a friend now is
Frankenstein,
the mad scientist and his monster.
I mean, they made us feel sorry for Jaime in the show a lot after he, you know, pushed Bran out of a window. They made us feel sorry for Cersei after all the terrible stuff she's done. Who's next? Are we going to end up feeling sorry for Ramsay at some point?
Never. You
know, come on, guys.
Never. It's not possible.
For Theon. For Theon.
Right.
Straight up villain.
Same thing.
The worst traitor of all. And then just what a pathetic wretch he became.
Yeah.
I mean, I still don't really feel sorry for Cersei.
I mean...
I don't. I feel like she went from being evil to crazy evil.
Right.
Right.
The part of me that felt like she deserves this overwhelmed the other part of me that was like, oh man, like I could, it made it her relatable is what it did.
Cause you've it done made that us before. Right,
walk naked through the streets. Actually just once.
But you did it cause you wanted to.
But it was fun.
There was no one yelling, what sinner or whatever it was.
Shame. No, they might've been saying that, but I did have boots on.
Boots and nothing else.
They sent two of their best sparrows to keep the entire throng at bay. You know, I guess they must have some respect.
I wanted her to flick that little chunk of poop off her shoulder.
I know. God, it was so gross. All of it.
I feel like in the book she was a little more broken, maybe, than it seemed.
She was still imperious.
Yeah, she seemed
in her shame.
Yeah, she kind of like toughed it out in this, and I feel like she was pretty broken in the book.
Well, I think that Lena Headey just is a far more impressive person than Cersei is
in the book.
Yeah, she lends gravity to an otherwise even more despicable character. But sad for Jaime. Sam got away.
Oh yeah, he's finally going to Old Town,
but he's taken the long way by wagon.
Well, they have to take a wagon. They'll take to begin with first.
Wagon to White Harbor and then fast travel to Old Town.
Yeah,
what they'll build a new set for that for season 6.
Which that's actually one of the storylines that's behind the book.
That's true. Yeah, they still have book material to build upon for Sam's storyline.
Kind of. Not
if
not
they
much.
Choose to. There's nothing there that they couldn't do away with and reinvent. Arya's story kind of panned out in an interesting way. So, like, oh God, the murder of Meryn Trant was pretty brutal.
Yeah.
And she got a monologue in there, and she was vengeance incarnate.
That was a really brutal. I mean, and she enjoyed it.
Yeah.
I think they had to.
That was sadistic.
Mm-hmm. I think they
But had. I mean, but they illustrated this as like the most sadistic possible guy. So
yeah, they did.
That's
right.
Exactly
they did.
What I was about to say. They had really to set did. It up just, you know, in case you forgot somehow or, you know, last week or you're just hating him. And they had to quickly touch on that again to justify what was about to happen to him, I think.
They didn't. I mean, just because it's been so long since he was punching
Sansa.
Yeah. And since he killed Syrio.
They flashed way back in the
previously on
Game of Thrones, really previously to the, you know, the first season.
Mm-hmm. I didn't remember that it was Meryn who killed Syrio.
Well, in the script they had her say you were the first one on my list. So that helped explain it too.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's right. That was the first one that Arya had it in for because he was the one that killed
Syrio. A quick aside, aside to the audience. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right, the logistics of the Faceless Men, then. I was at first disappointed that she basically pulled a physical mask and wig off of her head.
Mm-hmm.
You know, obviously there's some magic there that's even believable, you know.
Right.
The
right.
face looks human in the first place. But then it's a rubber thing that she holds on to. And she had to go return, put it back on the shelf.
That was a bit of a surprise, yeah.
Which I didn't like, and I thought that undermined the magic and mystery of it. But then they came right back with, like, when Jaqen appeared to kill himself in atonement for her debt.
Right.
And then just the face upon face upon face thing restored my sense of wonder and bewilderment at what's happening there.
So it worked out, kind of.
And it sort of paid off a thing that I was hoping for. Which was the idea that the Jaqen who has been mentoring Arya... It may or may not be the Jaqen that she met in Westeros.
Which we predicted, or at least entertained the thought of.
I mean, I feel like in the logic of the show, the Jaqen who is still alive is the Jaqen that she met. But they planted a seed of doubt.
Sure, sure.
And so Arya goes blind for her misstep.
Right.
Which is kind of true to the book.
Yeah. I mean, it's... out of order, but I mean, she, by the end of the book, she's gone through the whole blindness phase and is back seeing again. It was kind of part of her regular training, basically. So, not really like a punishment for
it's going out
of bounds.
It's kind of more like graduating to the next level of strange training.
Which they might still explain, you know, I imagine they will.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, something has happened with the blindness thing.
I mean, she demonstrated that she could master the art of changing her face.
Right, right.
But she did it for selfish reasons.
Mm-hmm.
But she also demonstrated that she can murder efficiently and effectively.
And brutally.
Which I guess they knew that she was going to do, but she didn't kill the guy they told her to kill.
Mm-hmm. I mean, a pretty serious breach, I think.
I thought it was a bit of foreshadowing when she said... I am Arya Stark. Like when she said, and who am I? Or I don't remember exactly.
She told him he was no one.
Right.
When she killed him.
But as soon as she said, I'm Arya Stark, I thought, oh, she's in trouble. She's doing exactly the opposite of what she's being trained.
Right.
I mean, in the army, if you just go kill some random person, you get in big trouble. You know.
But we don't really want Arya to forget herself and become a true servant of the Faceless God. We want her to learn what she needs to learn and be in service to the Starks for vengeance. Which, of course, will become subverted by Let's Save the Realm from the Army of the Dead. But I don't know how being a face-changing assassin is going to help in that regard.
Well, change herself into a White Walker and then kill the White Walker King.
Oh.
Simple.
Maybe you just found the end game there.
That's what happens.
So, of the Starks, there's Arya, you know, 75%.
Yeah.
There's Sansa. Whatever happened to Bran?
He's living under a tree north of the wall, learning how to be the three-eyed crow.
Okay.
Whatever that means. he'll never walk again, but he will fly.
Okay. And who's left of the Starks? Is that it?
Rickon is out there with Osha.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yep. That's right.
Living at large.
As far as we know.
And I feel like, you know, I talked about the theory of, you know, that some of the wording of Old Nan's stories about how, like, when the others were originally defeated, you know, they always refer to the Stark in Winterfell. And I feel like when a Stark is returned to Winterfell, it'll, like, the magic, whatever... oath or bond or, you know, agreement, treaty with the others will be satisfied and they'll retreat to the north because there's a Stark back in Winterfell. And maybe that Stark will be Rickon. I reckon.
Rickon, I reckon.
Yeah, I mean, the show, he's alive, so the show has to address it at some point.
Okay.
And they cast... a notable actress as Osha, so I think she'll return. Notable to Harry Potter fans, anyway.
Yes, my coworker calls her Tonks, and I didn't know what the fuck he was talking about. I'm like, that's not her name. He insisted.
So Sansa and Theon make a desperate leap of faith.
Man,
literally.
Into hopefully a very
deep
snowbank. Yeah. They didn't make it look deep enough.
Yeah, I was like, ooh, that's not like a 20-foot drift like it was in the books. Like, it's like, oh, okay, that was a long
baby
jump.
Wall.
Yeah.
Well, Wall the Junior. Contrast of it too. When I mean, they just threw the I don't remember her name. They threw the girl over
Miranda
over the edge.
Yeah, which was like a fifth of the drop.
Yeah, like a story or two.
Broke her neck, but I guess she fell into the permafrost.
Right.
Well, and she wasn't jumping. You know, she was landing, and there's a difference, I guess. But still, that contrast, it really... And they didn't show it. You know that they filmed something that they'll show us.
Right.
Season 6, episode 1.
Maybe it'll start out, season 6, episode 1 will start at mid-jump, like a Dukes of Hazzard episode. After the break. God.
That Stark girl's got herself in a real deep drift of pickles.
Oh my God.
Ramsay!
So, how about Brienne's never-ending vigil.
Her candlelight vigil.
And then she looks away for 1 minute.
I went to the bathroom.
Yeah.
And,
and the candle got lit.
Yeah.
I guess I kind of like that, but it felt a little too trite that she could just walk up after the battle with nobody around, and the only survivor is the one guy left that she wanted to kill in the first place.
Right.
She didn't mix it up with anyone at any point. Nothing. Wasn't seen.
Bad staging for that whole battle. I mean, I appreciate the CGI overhead shot of Stannis' pathetic-looking little force getting swarmed.
That was cool.
It was a kind of a letdown, the whole Battle of Winterfell, if you want to call it that. It was just...
gory enough for you?
No, it was just very disappointing.
It wasn't depicted as thoroughly as
it hasn't even happened in the book, so
right. And I don't believe it will happen in this way at all.
Right.
Lady Selyse and Shireen are alive and well in the books. And they'll stay that way as far as I can tell.
Davos had an awfully tepid response to Melisandre's return and unspoken bad news when he had the most emotional outburst in the show seconds before that. You know, I feel like he would have been a little more insistent on some additional information.
But he knew what was going to happen when he left.
But
he had the whole ride north to wrestle with the fact that he was leaving her to be killed.
I know, but you don't just calm down about something like that, and then when you see the person who's responsible for it, just be like, I've had a week to think about it. You know, that's when you fly off the handle again.
You're right. I mean, he tried to kill Melisandre once, mm-hmm. did he not? Or he aspired to, at least.
Yeah, well, he lunged, didn't he? I'm trying to remember.
Did he try to poison her? Is that the book?
No, I think you're thinking of someone did try to poison her, but it was some old man.
Oh, it was the maester who was so devoted to Stannis,
right?
Who didn't like Melisandre's influence,
right.
And tried to poison her, and she drank the poison and survived it, and yes. He drank the poison and died because he knowingly like it was like, oh, that's delicious. Are you going to drink it too, or? Or you drink it first, and then I'll drink it. So he drank it, knowing that he was sacrificing himself for the Lord that he loved.
Right.
And she drank it, and she was kind of like, oh, sorry, that poison doesn't work on me.
Yeah.
But your devotion is touching. So on the show, Mike, can you recall under what circumstances did Stannis cross Melisandre at one point? Didn't he basically decide she's got to go?
I think so, yeah.
And that's how he ended up in the cell for like half a season.
Right. I forget, exactly how it happened in the show. Like, I don't know that he actively tried to kill her or anything in the show.
I think it was more like he was planning to, and they stopped him well before he got the chance. Like, Melisandre saw it coming and just said, oh, don't kill him, but he's trying to kill me. Something like that. It sounds like 2.5 seasons ago.
I'm just going to say
But you're right.
Like
so if Stannis was going to if ever he was going to fly off the handle, I mean, there she was, defenseless.
Nope.
Nobody there but Jon.
Right.
And in that moment, he would have been in his full rights to just get stabbed.
And he would have been enraged by the, I mean, you said he knew, sure.
But he was saddened.
He knew, but he also asked her first off, the princess.
Well, he hoped.
Right.
So there's the whole discussion with Melisandre pre-battle. And then Melisandre was seen riding out of town, basically.
Right.
Like, she's lost at this point, I feel like.
She looked truly defeated and surprised.
Like, she doesn't know that Stannis lost the battle, but I guess I don't know. I mean, I think she felt betrayed by R'hllor to an extent, or just confused and dejected that her visions were wrong.
Yeah, what happened there?
Well, so the report came to Stannis, half the men are gone, all the horses are gone, and Melisandre is gone?
Well, but,
did that all happen at the same time?
It did,
yeah.
Okay. Pretty much, and your wife's dead. But but right before that, remember that Melisandre went to him and said, oh, I've looked into the flames, I see great victory.
He turned and shoulder checked her.
The shoulder, yeah.
Which is sweet shoulder check, by the way.
That was pretty great.
Although he didn't deserve any admiration at that point.
No, but it sent a message to her, like, you know what? What I heard in my head was him saying, you're nothing but an advisor to me. Just fuck off. Like, I've got the plan. We're going to execute the plan. Just fuck the fuck off. I don't care about you.
The time at which Stannis was the most on board with, you know, R'hllor, the Lord of Light, Melisandre, was just... the only time really was after Renly, right after Renly was slain, right? And he sidestepped that whole...
That was the most solid, tangible benefit
and it was super
to his
solid,
cause that she did. Yeah.
Supernatural, perfect, like, you know, and then everything else has kind of been, well, Blackwater.
He gained the full strength of Renly's support system.
Yeah.
All the Tyrells and that... everything that Renly had behind him for the Battle of the Blackwater, he was riding high at that point.
Right.
All then, based on that deceitful murder of his own defeat. Brother.
So, yeah. So, I mean...
He had it coming, man.
Yeah.
Ultimately, he's had it coming ever since he murdered Renly.
Right.
And for all of his imagined righteousness, he was undermined by that deceit.
He did murder Renly, but I mean, well,
but the thing is, he did it in such a way, it was an indirect thing. It was kind of like Melisandre's like, I'll help you out, you know, it's all gonna work out, just wait and see. So he basically let his subconscious go and do what he secretly wanted to have happen without having done it himself. But in the books, he honestly hasn't really depicted the weight of any sort of remorse for it. He's just so matter of fact about everything.
Well, he, like they said, you know, he had the worst possible day, just bad news after bad news after bad news. Defeat on the battlefield, dead wife, daughter sacrificed for no reason, Melisandre gone, you know, every forces depleted. At that point, he probably, you know, he marched against at least Davos's council, you know, when it was, the weather sucks, it's too bad. And that did end up being a factor in losing everything. But, you know, at that point, turning back wasn't an option. Going forward to defeat was still the right thing to do.
Basically, everything would have been disastrous. The only thing he had to do to possibly save his situation was the long shot of that battle. And I'm glad that those forces that everyone like snuck out of camp in the middle of the night as a result of that horror show of murdering his daughter.
Yeah, that felt fair. That felt
But he should have anticipated. I mean, it was just so obvious. I mean, it doesn't take any sort of moral genius to know that you don't set your daughter on fire in front of a crowd of men and expect to that to build any sort of
morale,
loyalty, even, or morale. Exactly.
Even Queensmen, yeah.
But by all rights, they should have revolted in that moment and saved her and slit his throat.
Totally. Right.
I think in that moment, he lost it all.
Yeah. I mean, he looked, last week's episode, after, like, he just looked super haggard after that. He was just like a defeated man at that point.
Well, they killed Lady Selyse right before killing Stannis. I mean, they're tying up loose ends to narrow the scope of what the show will be going forward. But, like, Lady Selyse is still a menacing figure in the book, and she's got her own twisted agenda. You know, and she's still devoted to R'hllor in her own creepy way. So she's got stuff that's still going to happen, sending the story off in a different direction.
Well, right. What separates this whole story is that supernatural people can come back from the dead, the White Walkers, all of that. Because otherwise, I mean, that's what keeps it from being just a medieval tale, you know, of like...
It's a political story.
Yeah. I mean, because this is, what, 5,000, 10,000, 5 billion years before us? Who knows? I mean, it's just like forever ago, and it's just the same old tale. You know, it's just comedy and tragedy and family and the fight for power. I mean, it's called Game of Thrones. It's perfect. But there is that little twist, that little magical element that I find really intriguing, but it is what separates it from that type of traditional story.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they don't usually toe the line like this. Usually something is either completely mundane or completely arcane, right? I mean, worlds that people create, fictional universes, are usually one or the other. They don't kind of dip in and out of magic lightly. You know?
Yeah, that's true. There's a real light touch to it, which actually I think makes it, it lends it more credibility, makes it more real and more creepy. Well,
good horror stories let the supernatural creep in unexpected ways.
Yeah, that's true.
And I think that's kind of a little bit of what's happening in these stories. And the show has just been so kind of scattershot, you don't get the same sense that you get in the books of magic having waned from the world and is now returning to the world, because the show just sort of has supernatural things happen here and there, but there's no sort of sense of...
There's no history.
Well,
not really.
I guess that there's not necessarily the same sense of magic being more potent now than it was a generation ago. Or a few years ago, even. But there's they dropped a couple comments like about that. Like, I think the pyromancer,
the wildfire, yeah,
who was making the wildfire, made a comment about how they've ramped up production because all of a sudden it's so much easier to make the wildfire. And, you know, there was the Red Comet. That was kind of like season two stuff. But since then, dragons have been around and White Walkers have been around. And But, you know, they showed the thing with Ser Barak having been raised by Thoros. But it was just such a... It was like one episode of weirdness in, like, season three. never really touched upon. Like, the book revisits it enough times to give it more of a sense of foreshadowing of more weirdness to come.
Yeah.
But, and we saw the Children of the Forest. I mean, we saw the White Walker's army in its full strength. We've seen the dragon in its full glory. There's not a lot of sense of wonder left as far as those things, except for just waiting for them to move the chess pieces around for the big showdown.
What do you think about Tyrion's just kind of, he's in charge of Meereen now, basically?
Oh, yeah. I think they skillfully set him up, and they gave his character a good arc.
Boy, everyone gave great weight to anything Dario said.
Yeah.
I mean, he was just said, you do this. Go here. We're going here. I don't want to hear about it. See ya.
Well, he was the voice of reason in that room.
Right.
Which
was good counsel, but
he wouldn't have been.
Right.
I mean, there's three strong personalities in that room. I'm surprised he was able to just say, this is what's happening.
Well, you see, he was the most handsome.
Varys shows back up.
I knew it.
That was a cool little moment. Not really explained adequately, but I mean, I guess it's easy to accept that somehow he's just like, oh, it's Varys. Let's just let him into the Queen's inner council chamber because he's probably got important work to do.
Also, probably not incredibly necessary, his reappearance, but I like it.
I think they couldn't resist that conversation between he and Tyrion. To underscore the whole thing of Tyrion being in a position to run a city again, which was kind of the height of his accomplishments.
No, that's true. Well, plus, in the characters who are good at fighting need people to fight with, and the characters that are good at talking need people to talk with. I mean, remember how great Littlefinger and Varys, like, their back and forth was, and so that's kind of needed. Tyrion alone is not nearly as interesting as Tyrion talking to someone.
True.
And the idea that Tyrion is basically going to be the mastermind that tells Missandei and Grey Worm how to run the city, and he's the one that will work out all the gory little details so that Meereen can prosper and not fall into civil war. I mean, if he can pull that off, then he can retire a happy man.
He can build some vineyards.
Yeah.
He can
first things first. Like,
he'll sign up for some dragon riding lessons.
That was a really funny line when he's like, and drink.
Yeah.
Like, all he can do is talk. And drink. Hello. That was pretty good.
And I just, well, because, yeah, so Vera shows back up here, but then in the book, like, he's nowhere near. He shows up at the end of the books, and he's in Westeros. So it's...
You know, you said Dario gave good counsel in that room, but his decision to ride off with Jorah the Andal was probably the worst decision he ever made.
You get that feeling.
Nobody wants Dario dead more than Jorah.
Yeah, but that's not Jorah's.
No, but that's not Jorah's. I wouldn't put it past him. Really,
he might give him the grayscale.
We all want him to be more. I mean, he's noble.
He's too noble to do anything shitty like that.
Yeah, he's noble.
Plus, he probably knows that Dario can help Dany, so he stays for now.
For now, but once they find her, Dario's an uncomfortable.
Yeah,
presence.
Awkward.
But then again, if it weren't for the grayscale, though, I think Jorah basically wants to help her as much as he can because he knows he's a walking dead man, basically. So he doesn't, I think he knows he'll never be with Dany, really. And I think even the Jorah in the book kind of knows it, even though doesn't he make sort of a fumbly drunken pass at her, or maybe not even drunken, but just...
Yeah, he does in the book.
Yeah.
Just fumbly.
Fumbly.
Fumbly wumbly.
His hands fumbled onto her breasts.
That's how that goes.
He's a character that's really had a lot of changes in focus, direction. I mean, I guess a lot of characters, I should look at the Journeys map again, but like a lot of the characters have gone back and forth, and he's in, he's out, he's...
Yeah, Kat just hung up a map that she got of where every character, their travels from book one to the last book, and it's so radically wrong now based on, you know.
Oh, yeah, because it's based on the books.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's right for the book, yeah, but compared to the show, it's just like, well, that's not even the right continent, you know, that get out of magic marker.
The Lands of Ice and Fire.
Mm-hmm.
Available from
your local bookstore.
Westeros Publishing.
BantamDell.com.
12 maps. Pretty cool.
Let's talk a little bit more about Dorne. The whole send-off, last episode, last couple episodes. What's her name?
Can't Illyria.
Remember. Being like, okay, to Jaime, you know, we were like, oh, she's being awful, you know, awful nice. Now we get it, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
She wasn't nice at all at the end of the episode before. She was like, she poured her drink out on the ground and walked off.
Okay, when she had the talk with Jaime where it seemed like she was...
Right. Yeah, oh yeah, she does show up and... Mm-hmm.
Well, in this episode, we saw, at least what we can assume, was her motive was just to make everyone comfortable enough with her and make them believe that she, you know, is cool now so that she could put on her poisonous lipstick and just give her a little kiss goodbye.
So will it be open war?
I don't know. I don't think it'll come to that. I think other stuff will come to a head to make it sort of beside the point. I don't feel like... The armies of Dorne versus what? The armies of Highgarden in defense of King's Landing, because the Lannisters are already sort of shamed. And Margaery, is Margaery still in a cell? Did she do a walk of shame? I mean, that's sort of unexplained.
She was in a cell last we saw, wasn't she?
Yeah.
Yeah, but they didn't... Yeah, we didn't see her.
And I mean, if the High Sparrow was willing to let Cersei return to the Red Keep, why wouldn't he have done the same for... Well, if Margaery didn't confess, I suppose... But I don't think Margaery would have held out as long as Cersei did.
I mean, and I feel like so, Cersei's back at the Red Keep, so what's her obligation to go show back up to the Sept?
Yeah, why would she ever let them get their mitts on her again?
Right.
God.
Why would she agree to a trial?
Right. Like, how are they going to come get her?
I think she's going to have people create flamethrowers. So that she can just burn down everyone. That's what I felt like watching her do that walk of shame.
She doesn't even have the news of Myrcella yet. I mean,
she hates everybody now. She is...
Well, we haven't seen anything yet.
Yeah, she was evil and plotting and cunning and true before, and now she's all of that plus...
If the only thing she cares about is her kids, she's now lost her second of three.
Well, in a way, I feel like she's lost Tommen too, because he was not there for her. He got moody and went into his room.
Yeah, which was her fault completely.
Well, right, but I feel like when I watched her walk in naked and covered in shit, literally, and just, you know, bleeding feet, like, that's the absolute lowest and most humiliated.
Of everyone, Tommen would have been there to greet her.
And I just felt like, Tommen, this is what happens when you don't do anything. Like, lesson learned in life. Well, like, neglect your duties.
I still don't think that all of this compared to the news of Myrcella being gone. We haven't seen the true explosion. So, we'll see.
Which she will blame Tyrion for sending her to Dorne somehow. In the first place.
Right.
Wow.
Partially, yeah.
Tyrion gets blamed for everything.
He said, you know, I want to help... I want to help Daenerys take the Lannisters down.
Right.
You know, he has no love for her. He knows that she has no love for him. So.
What's going to happen to Trystane? On a boat with the Lannisters.
After Myrcella dies.
His life may be forfeit. I mean,
like, who cares at this? Like, I mean, not who cares, but
Dorne cares.
Yeah,
well,
yeah.
He might be
but
a political
story wise,
or he may have been a sacrificial pawn too. Mm-hmm. I mean,
right?
But he's meant to sit on the Small Council.
Oh, I don't think that's going to happen.
And it doesn't seem like that's going to happen. But if it doesn't, that'll be a war with Dorne for sure.
Right.
Yeah.
But it doesn't seem like I said, that'll...
Something else will happen.
Something else will happen.
This show.
It's crazy.
So, the death of Jon and, you know, other deaths along the way, are people going to be... Are they going to lose fandom over some of this? Are people going to be like, I'm done with this show?
I think so.
They've jumped a shark of goodwill at this point?
I think so, because I have a friend who... when I first started getting into it, I was so excited. Oh my God, I'm catching up and I'm watching, you know, to catch up with everyone and starting to read the books. And I had a friend at work who said, oh yeah, I really loved that. And I got into it, but there was a point where I just had to stop. It got too intense, too complex, too many people that you love die. I mean, at the time that was kind of a spoiler, but it's true. So I think so. I think based on that, you know, people are going to say this is too much. And people like watching it for certain characters. But It's going to be the type of people that we lost when Robb Stark died, you know. They'll still be watchers.
Everybody still loves Tyrion, though, right? And Tyrion is poised to do some neat and interesting stuff
but
again.
But he definitely, I mean, his shining seasons were, what, 2 and 3 probably? And this whole season he's been he hasn't had a chance to do much, granted, but he can have great dialogue written for him no matter where he is, no matter what he's doing, you know, and he can still shine in that way. That's where he does shine.
But there is hope for the next season.
There is hope, yeah.
In Marine.
I mean they're getting their act together.
He's kind of right back where he was at the start of season 2, where he's got an intriguing puzzle to solve,
which they addressed directly in the show. They practically said that, you're right. Yeah. So.
It was almost just like, stick with us, folks. Tyrion's going to do some neat stuff.
Maybe that was it, yeah.
No pressure. Sansa might do some amazing things. I mean,
like
if we can get rid of Ramsay, if we can, you know, get Bolton's out of
Winterfell.
I mean, I think something awesome could happen there. Bran is going to come back in the next season.
Many heroes have died in the show. Only one super villain remains, though, right? The only one person who's been shitty since the beginning.
It depends on how you classify Cersei.
That's who I'm talking about. That's who I meant. Yeah.
Oh, okay. I thought you were talking about Ramsay.
No. He hasn't been around.
He's a hyper villain.
So I was thinking that maybe his days are numbered because no one who's great or terrible just lasts.
Ugh.
I mean, is there anyone still around from the beginning?
I feel like Ramsay can't do much more damage other than just be an object of vengeance because he doesn't really have anybody in his clutches anymore.
Well, we don't know. Well, I suppose they're not going to. Next season, they're not going to show that Sansa and Reek just jumped and broke their legs and they were recaptured.
Oh, gosh. If that happens, I'm done.
And they spend a whole season recuperating in full body casts.
Being tortured by Ramsay.
Yeah. Fuck.
I mean, this show has a tendency to be surprisingly grim with some of that stuff.
Yeah.
They knew to cue up the ultra dire, grim, dirgy music at the end of this one. Yes. I mean, you know, Jon Snow dies, a single cello or whatever. That's...
Ooh. So, what do you think about Ollie and his... God. The kid, he really has it out for Jon, apparently.
Well, I'm surprised. I thought Ollie, at the end, instead of saying for the watch, he was going to say for my parents. But he didn't. I mean, that was his real... He's not. Well, I guess he's getting dedicated to the Night's Watch now, but
he's getting dedicated to Sir Alistair.
Mm-hmm.
Gross.
Yeah.
So many unlikable people.
Yeah, I mean, with Sam and John both gone, who really even is rooting for the Night's Watch at this point?
That's why he can't actually be dead because there's just no story at the wall.
Or
now.
Well, it's complete justification. It's justification for the complete overrun of the wall. I mean,
yeah,
maybe.
Oh,
the wall
because there's nobody left up there that we care about.
I guess I've always been operating under the presumption that basically the conflict would happen at the wall and that the others would never make it any farther than that. But maybe it will go bad. Maybe it'll go down in King's Landing.
Oh, man.
I mean, if the others take over half the kingdom, that would be crazy.
Or maybe with your Winterfell idea, maybe something special happens there.
It's possible.
Rickon will just come bounding up on Shaggy Dog and just go wander into the...
Land on the throne.
The abandoned, you know, audience hall and just have a seat on the chair and magically it'll be the Deus Ex Machina thing where all the others will just drop dead in an instant at the last possible minute.
God, no, please.
I was just about to say, it's possible that this show will be... Well, it'll be completely different next season. I mean, it'll just be a completely different show.
Well, that might be part of the reason they killed off five.
Yeah.
You know, if you're going to get a new host, maybe of new characters, they know a person can only remember so much or keep so many storylines in their mind. So maybe they're just like, you know, get rid of that, cut that.
Well, like, they're tying up loose ends. But after I thought about it for a second, this has happened before. Because I remember, was it at the end of season two, Ned Stark's head on a...
One.
Season one.
Yeah.
As early as that, the show was a completely different show the next season. And now I feel like kind of looking back and seeing if that was true every season. Because maybe it was.
They have done kind of a hard reset or scene change.
Dramatic.
Every season.
Somebody was just telling me about Black Mirror, which is a show.
We've seen episode one,
and it was so intense that I have not found myself even close to in the mood for another. I need to be ready.
That recommended it to me said, "Don't watch the first episode first."
Brilliant advice. Sorry.
Because it's basically a Twilight Zone.
Brilliant advice.
Where it's a different setting, different scenario. Yeah. I mean, the episodes have nothing to do with each other.
Here's the thing with the first episode. Boy, we're really off topic, but oh well. If someone were to describe to you the premise of episode one of Black Mirror, you would laugh. There's no way to describe it non-comically. It sounds like a put-on. It sounds like, I'm not watching that show. That's fucking stupid. Like, all right, really? Is it really about that? But the delivery of the show is just jaw-droppingly, like, grim, again, to use a word. It's, like, it's so stark. It's morose. It's just, like...
It's done.
It's the most, like, person being in an unwinnable, even unlivable situation.
But they're also playing out a what-if to its conclusion, all the way to its conclusion, and saying, what if this happens?
It's a completely ludicrous plot,
which is great. I mean, I love What If.
And that is actually Twilight Zone. You should watch the first one first.
Did we watch that? Is that the one with the pig?
There.
Yeah, we don't give anything away. But that didn't give anything away. But
that kind of show, it's hard to build, you know, unless you just love the conceptual, you know, storytelling, like just basically playing a premise out to its logical conclusion.
I mean, that's exactly what it is. Yeah.
I'm intrigued and I'll watch more, but I need a little time to recover.
I want to watch the first one again just for the texture. I mean, just the way everyone's characters, of how people respond to a completely unworkable situation.
It's so real.
Well, just be heartened at the idea that that's the hardest one to watch. So if you found merit in that at all, then you'll probably enjoy the other ones as well.
You're talking to Kat now because I want to be that. I want to cringe that hard at all of them.
You want to go back and...
Weesh.
I'll cringe that hard, but maybe not in that specific way. What show were we talking about?
Well, we're coming up right on an hour, too. So sorry about the last 10 minutes.
Well, so the only other thing we didn't really touch on is Dany and her encounter with the Dothraki army.
The call, yeah. Who's...
I felt like it was illogical for her just to wander away from Drogon. Like, after, you know, just like, well, I'm bored. And I'm hungry. I'm just going to start walking off into the wilderness all by myself.
She said she was hungry. She does that in the book, so.
I know, but...
Not in that way, I guess.
She's afraid of becoming food.
I feel like she should have hung out with the dragon for a few days at least.
Right. I feel like she, like, pretty quickly was like, oh, no, I need to get right back. Like,
Now, are people from this Cal supposed to know who she is, do we think?
I feel like her legend would have spread among all the Dothraki.
It's a lot of Blood Riders, is that what they're called?
Yeah.
I mean, it's a pretty good-sized group.
Well, the Blood Riders are like the honor guard that protects the Cal.
Okay, I got you.
But the Dothraki are also brutal in sort of like, you know, kill your predecessor to steal his power.
I mean, there's no...
Well, I thought it was
They're pretty rapey, too.
Yeah. I thought it was more of a we'll follow someone until they show any sign of not being as powerful as they were.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's right.
Well, and it's all about a show of power, so that's the only way you can maintain it. And she doesn't... Not only does she not have that, she doesn't have anything to maintain.
Well, let me think about... it's coming back to me now that the widow of Akal is meant to return to the city of the old crones.
You have to go to Vice Dothrak and basically live
out the rest of your life as sort of
a moon something.
Oh, great. Now she's going to get stuck there.
That's why I think she dropped... That's why I thought she took her ring off.
She didn't want to be recognized as the widow.
That's what I thought, right, too, but they said no.
Yeah, like the afterwards was like, oh, that's like a clue so someone can find her. Okay.
Mm-hmm. But I mean, how they're not gonna, unless they just don't read the newspaper, they're not gonna mistake her for anyone else.
Well, what you said makes sense, because otherwise, if they didn't have that rule, she should have been more strong and confident and said, "I ate a fucking horse heart. Like, I know how it is." And she can speak their language. She'll be rusty, but
she can speak their language. But she doesn't have any weight with these people. You know, unless
she's got to try something.
If they recognize her for who she was, then they'll keep her alive and return her to Vase Dothrak, which to honor their tradition.
But all she has to do is tell them.
If they think that she's just some hottie stranded in the middle of the mm-hmm. grasslands, then they'll do whatever it is that brutal bastards do with helpless women.
mm-hmm.
I don't really see any other logical. Unless, you know, she does a wolf whistle and Drogon comes flying.
Well, I have until next season to get over Jon Snow.
Are you mad about that?
I'm sad. I'm sad about it.
Zombie Jon Snow is going to be...
No, no.
Even
hotter.
I don't know. Even just saying that sounds a little True Bloody.
Not go there.
It's okay. Only if they bring Ygritte back, then they can be
zombie.
That was her name.
Ygritte,
and then they can be zombie.
Bring her back.
Lovers.
Zombie everybody.
That's where this show is headed.
They're so hot right now.
It better not be headed there.
No.
All right, gang.
I'm headed elsewhere.
Oh, I'm already asleep.
We should start segueing out. Yeah.
On our Segway scooters.
All right. Four of us are mounting up on our Segways, leaning towards the horizon.
Until next year, folks.
We'll circle a pretty girl in a field on our Segways.
On that note, goodbye.